On today's episode of Let's Locums.
If I can get a doctor who comes into the office at, 8:05 for an 8 o'clock clinic start, and then stays until 4:30, the last patient leaves at 4:35, and never actually has a moment to interact with staff, I'm not going to get a great outcome. But if I have a doctor who's like, hey, like at lunchtime, I want to talk about this content, they may not master the content, but they're going to form relationships, and that's going to heal a ton of wounds.
Welcome to Let's Locums, the podcast hosted by Drs. Mark and Allison Royer, ENT surgeons and the founders of SpecialtyLocums.com. Join us as we explore the world of locum tenens and help you navigate the options for a flexible and rewarding medical career.
Hi, welcome to Let's Locums. This is Mark Royer. I am here today with Dr. Masterson, Caleb Masterson from Alabama, who I'm actually a huge fan of. We're here at the American Academy of Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery meeting, our annual meeting. It's in Indianapolis, Indiana. And Dr. Masterson was kind enough to join us here at the Smith & Nephew booth. I'll explain in a little bit why we chose that, but it has a hint is it has to do with the coffee bar that they have here. So,
absolutely. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for the work that you do. I think that anybody that's doing anything in the physician space that's creative, I'm a fan of.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that very much.
Good for you.
So in that vein, I'm going to start by showing some social media clips that first got my attention.
Oh, yes.
Cause of the patient's condition?
Yeah, I mean, most likely the bacteria in the lungs and obviously the underlying inflammatory process.
Right, but is there like another underlying cause?
Are you learning about other underlying causes?
No.
Yeah, that is the underlying cause. I'm confused.
Hello! So I didn't mean to start you there, love.
Well, who are you?
I'm the underlying cause of disease.
What?
I've been around for quite some time. Actually got this little jacket in the 1700s. But I'm back. I'm back and I'm better than ever.
What are you talking about? Underlying cause?
No, you've heard of me. You've read your textbooks about me. No, I haven't always had the same name, of course. No. Now, it started a long time ago. Back in, Greek times, those were some crazy people. Now, they believed in black bile and the humours, and then, of course, things kind of progressed and we moved into the Middle Ages when we thought stars and astrology were the cause of disease.
Right, but obviously with the advent of modern medicine, we don't believe that anymore.
I mean, no, it's been lights out for me for a while. Except for that little stint in the 90s when people thought that vaccines caused autism. No evidence really there. But
right, there was a small stint, yes.
Anyway, long story. Now we've got this little device here, you guys, and apparently you can get millions of people to interact with ideologies that are not based in evidence at all. Very similar to what it used to be like when I was in charge. But there's talk that I might be back in charge. People don't trust institutions anymore, like the NIH or doctors or hospitals. Now it's all about these multi-million dollar, what's the word that you use? Oh, influential people or something or other.
We find ourselves at a little, there's a time period here, but we're gonna come out of it, right?
You trust these profiteering people more than medical professionals, so back. Underlying cause of disease, mitochondrial dysfunction, who knows? Who knows what's next? But I've been getting some phone calls from people that are pretty high up asking my opinion on some things.
Wait, what?
Very exciting time for me. Who knows where this might go? We may have a new era of medicine on our hands. And I am ready. Toodaloo.
What?
So it's interesting, trying to play parts, with yourself, because I just have nothing. I'm not talking to anything. I desperately wish that I could find a group of people that could play the characters repetitively. We've tried to put other people in videos, but it never does as well. So,
well, I think I would change it a little bit. I think I love the solo actor. I love the jacket. Love the accent on this video.
This jacket actually was sitting in my closet from a Halloween celebration from 3 years ago, Napoleon Bonaparte or something like that. And then I hadn't touched it in years. And then, just all the medical misinformation that's out there right now, we decided to make a comedic spoof of someone that was influencing the influencer.
Okay, so I love it. That's great, right?
Yeah,
so social media, that's what I'd love to know. How you got started in social media? I mean, clearly you now have a videographer. Yeah. You've really, the game is amazing that you have going on here. I'd love to know the origin and then how you find it to be most useful. Is it for patient engagement and patient flow into your practice? Or is it so that, annoying dudes like me will call you up and direct message and say, hey, how about you come and meet me at the Smith & Nephew booth?
Yeah, so number one is just, joy. I mean, I get so much joy from being creative. It's a big outlet for me. I almost pursued a career in music before going to medical school. And so this is just that creative outlet that I always had. And now it exists. We're in this really weird time in life to where there's almost no cost for entry. You can just pick up a camera, pick up a phone, and start talking. And that obviously has some consequences associated with it for some, but also some positive. So that's number one, just absolute joy I get from it. Number two is I think, and this, I hope all physicians listening to this kind of lean into this a little bit, or just medical providers in general, that, you know, there's something to be said about building a personal brand. And, you know, kind of with what you're doing, I mean, you're setting yourself apart as a physician that's almost a voice of locums, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, whatever you're passionate about, I'm passionate about comedy, I'm passionate about being creative. But there are physicians that are even EMTs that are passionate about reflux, that are passionate about voice therapy, that are passionate about head and neck, you know, all of those things. If you're passionate about it, you are, all the knowledge is in you. Just talk about it. And people want to hear from experts anyway. So physicians are uniquely set up to be successful on social media if you want to be. It's just being consistent and persistent.
What pitfalls have you either run into or either see with social media? I mean, you have a lot of followers, you're, you know, posting frequently. Yeah. I'm sure there are pitfalls.
Number one, the warning would be psychologically, right? So you can, if you find your value in the engagement that you get, that can be a big psychological hang up for a lot of people. Addiction. I actually did a... thank you. I really appreciate you saying that.
He's amazing.
Thanks so
right?
much. Yeah. Appreciate it. No, you're good.
It's honey, man. We just had a fan interruption. So
yeah, we did. And I'm trying to get back on topic here.
We're talking about pitfalls.
Pitfalls,
and
okay.
Psychological.
Yeah, so, you know, I actually did a lecture on this yesterday. But the same methodology psychologically that we use to get people engaged in social media platforms, that hook model, mm-hmm. Is what, you know, you can use to get people engaged in therapeutics. But it's dangerous, right? So if I'm, you know, trying to log on every day to pull the slot machine to try to hit the jackpot, and that's my primary end goal, that leads to addiction and psychological depression. But if my primary purpose is just posting to engage and to find joy and fulfillment, then that's wonderful. So number one would be like psychological. Number two is just being smart, right? Like the moment you say I'm a physician and you post something online, you have to be willing to receive the consequences of everyone's interpretation of that. So that goes to personality. So if your personality is such that what people think about you is quintessential to your self-worth, I would caution you to enter the social media space, because I get a lot of positive comments, but I get a lot of negative comments too. Like, why you shouldn't be doing this. You should be focused on patient care. You should be spending more time in the hospital. And I think those are valid points from people's perspectives. But at the same time, you know, I don't let those comments define my worth or value. So that'd be number two.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and something that if you are getting negative comments for what you're doing, then you know, who won't, anybody who goes on and has a social media presence will, because your stuff is hilarious and smart and on point, and regardless of, I think, any reasonable opinion. Yeah. So the fact that you ever get anything besides, hey man, that's awesome, or a fellow ENT coming up and be like, I love your stuff.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I think the world we live in is just people full of, you know, they're going to give you their opinion, positive and negative. People are going to try to tear you down. And that's, you know, life, period. So I think being a positive force for just good comedy, engagement publicly is positive. Just know that when you put yourself out there, people are going to comment on everything. Your appearance, your voice, what you think, not just your ideas. Because, I mean, you can debate ideas all day. That's fine. But when people get personal, you just have to be willing to be like, I'm not going to listen to that and move on.
Not a skill everybody has. Not one that I know. All right, next clip.
What's the problem? I'm having trouble with the claim.
No, don't. Okay, just... Show me. Right. Okay. Is it the right provider ID? Okay. Can you check the date of service? No, it should be just right running again.
I know.
Be quiet. Don't let him hear what you're saying.
Is there a problem?
Nothing's wrong. No, we're good.
Let me take a look.
We're okay. We don't need help. Thank you.
What's the problem? Have you checked the mainframe?
The mainframe?
Is the dial tone working on the internet?
The dial-up? Yeah, no. The 90s didn't call. We didn't plug into them.
Did you try to reinstall the software?
Yeah, no, we'll look into that. Absolutely, yeah.
I got it fixed. Have you unplugged the computer?
Mm-hmm.
Do you need a different CD-ROM?
This...
The CD? The CD?
Okay.
It's working.
You got it.
Have you Control-Alt-Delete?
No, thank you. No, we'll check that.
Okay. Go on about my business here.
Okay, that'll do it. Just let me know if you need any help.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay, back to work.
So, these characters, Physician Boss, Practice Manager, and the MA are all based on my experiences in residency. So I did community-based residency training, and we were just at a private practice office most of the time. And so, like, I saw the same interactions with every doctor every day. And then I got into private practice and realized, wait, I'm doing the same thing that my attendings did. And so a lot of people ask me, well, where does all this inspiration come from? Or the second most common question, do you have a camera in my office? And I look at people and I say, newsflash, we're all the same. Like, we all act the same. We all say the same things. And these practice managers, wonderful human beings that have to try to deal with us and, like, herd cats to try to, like, make sure the patient care is optimal. So that little, those pain points among that provider-practice manager relationship is what all this is based on, because it's so ubiquitous. I mean, every practice you're in.
Empathy for all roles is really what stands out to me in that one. And it sounds like your training was unique in that you were seeing, rather than like the ivory tower of academics, where stuff is very hierarchical and you don't have those interactions where people are, probably their kids are playing in sports together on the weekends, and but also just dealing with a community which has its own unique challenges. I love the empathy that you have for all roles, right?
And
this kind of video, this clip, why I thought it was useful is just private practice in general. You seem to thrive in private practice, right? From your content and from what I understand you've set up. And I was curious to know if you think private practice is still a viable option.
Absolutely. It's not going to look like it did in 1992. But if you're willing to be adaptable, you'll exchange that for autonomy. And I think that autonomy, number one, is the most undervalued resource in healthcare, especially from providers and physicians. When we come out of training, we're not exposed to the options. We're kind of narrow-mindedly focused, and, you know, appropriately, because of, like, the educational environment we were trained in, to stay in academics, stay in education, to, you know, move toward the traditional hierarchy, like you were saying. But what I didn't realize when I set up practice was the amount of, like, meaning autonomy that I would get, not only from, of course, taking care of patients and helping the disease process, but also, like, interacting with human beings. You know, like, people that walk into your practice that need a job because they're trying to pay for football camp for their kids on the weekend, or they've had a job at the hospital and they just don't like the corporate stress. You can provide almost a respite if you're willing to just be a human being. And anybody in private practice that's listening to this is going to say, okay, yeah, I've tried all that and I don't get always. But, you know, setting up a culture that inspires people to be the best versions of themselves has been the most rewarding and fulfilling thing I've done. And then I think we've been successful because we've treated people well. You know, the president of Marriott in, like, 1992 said, take care of your people and they'll take care of your customers. And that's so true. Everyone wakes up in the morning wanting to do a good job. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I want to be a bad nurse, I want to be a bad MA. They wake up and say, you know what, I'm going to do a good job today. They want to go home thinking they did a good job. So if you provide a pathway and a place for them to do that, private practice is very viable.
And one thing that was very innovative that you've done is the coffee bar / allergy clinic. And that's why I wanted to come here, is because they have a coffee bar. Can you tell me about that? Where that idea came from and how that works? So, is it truly you come in, you get your, you have an espresso machine and you get your allergy shot?
Yeah, so it was actually my wife's idea, who's standing right next to us.
It's your idea?
It was.
Awesome. That's great. So, strong work. It's the most innovative ENT idea in the last 15 years, I'd say. So,
yeah, we both have an addiction. We're feeding it. So we have immunotherapy in our practice. You have to wait in the office 30 minutes after getting an injection. We wanted to change the experience. My wife, Erin, was sitting in the pediatrician's office at our local community, and there was a sign on the door that said, for allergy immunotherapy shots, do X, Y, and Z. And it was the traditional look. It was my practice's look at the time. The ceiling tiles were kind of, like, moldy and falling down. The wallpaper was peeling off the wall. I mean, things that, like, we don't really prioritize in practice. We prioritize, like, as physicians, we prioritize patient care appropriately. But as a mom sitting in the waiting room with four kids, like, I don't even want my kids to touch the magazines. That's disgusting. And so we said to ourselves, okay, if we're going to have a place that we expect a group of 500 to 1,000 people to come back to every week repetitively for 30 minutes, why don't we make it enjoyable? And so we thought to ourselves, what's a low barrier for entry? Coffee. And then we both love coffee. And so you would be surprised at just being innovative. I think, you know, physicians in general are very creative, very innovative people. And so just, especially if you're in practice or private practice, you have the opportunities to innovate a little bit. It doesn't have to be a coffee bar, but it could just be changing the experience just a little bit. Makes the patient feel as though you care about them. Makes the patient feel, even though intrinsically you do care about them, that's why you're a physician. But if you can show them more obviously, it resonates much better with them. So it's been well adopted. And now it's what we love about it is it's become a community space. So people will come in there, they don't even have appointments, and meet. We have a local Division I football coaches meeting there every week. We have a local knitting club meeting that meets there. We have a couple church small groups that meet there. So it's truly a community space that we really like.
That's one thing that we're missing a lot in communities I've been reading about and experiencing is that third space. Like, doesn't really, you have work, you have
third
space home, but where do you go to have those type of events? So, wow, it's great that you do that. So, all right, next clip.
If you start to break out of the cycle, it looked like, let me tell you, you start to feel calm in situations of urgency. Well, we're going to figure it out. We're going to get through it. My emotions are not going to affect the outcome here. You start to assume responsibility, and this is the biggest one. When you hear an outcome, instead of immediately blaming someone else, you're saying, okay, what did I say or communicate that didn't make it make sense? You start to coach instead of criticize. You're open to ideas and learning from everyone. Questions don't upset you. Ugh, if I hear that question one more time, that's not a part of your psychology. You're starting to grab hold of those thoughts and say, I'm really glad I got that question. And you make space for others to grow. If you do this, it will affect those around you. Even if you have the belief right now, there's no point in doing this because it's not going to change anything. Here's one thing it will change. It'll change you.
Okay, so first of all, hella professional. Is that Blaze we
That's
have to thank for that?
Yep. Yeah. Blaze is...
Looks amazing. And it doesn't seem like you've been doing this too terribly long. This one specifically, is that right?
Correct. Yeah. So we just launched this with... we love to build, measure, learn when it comes to creativity. The Get Real Clinic is predicated on how do we amplify the relationship between the provider and the staff? How do we heal the gap there? Because people message me all the time, I sent this video to my physician and it started a conversation. Mm-hmm. Or I sent this video to my practice manager and it started a conversation. So it's created uniquely in the sense that we spend about 5 minutes up top talking about an issue. Mm-hmm. The two that are out right now are dealing with generational differences in the workplace and then also drama in the workplace. And then we split it off into a podcast episode for the staff and a podcast episode for the physician with a worksheet. And the whole idea behind this is really trying to have an excuse to generate conversation. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do the worksheet. You don't have to answer the questions. But if I have an idea of man, these are some interesting concepts that were presented, let's just have a dialogue. Yeah. I want this content to be an excuse to form relationships. So anything that we do that relates to human-to-human interaction in our practice or out of our practice, the content is the excuse for the relationship, never focus on the content. So if I can get a doctor who comes into the office at 8:05 for an 8 o'clock clinic start and then stays until 4:30, the last patient leaves at 4:35, and never actually has a moment to interact with staff, I'm not going to get a great outcome. But if I have a doctor who's hey, at lunchtime, I want to talk about this content, they may not master the content, but they're going to form relationships, and that's going to heal a ton of wounds.
I think this one, too, especially in the format you've done it, really allows everybody to be seen, which is so important. You're talking to the providers, but you're also talking to the staff. This clip was from Signs You're Leading from a Healthier Place for the providers.
Right.
And I love the points, and we'll play it on for the podcast. But what stood out to me about this is some of the keys that you give on this, specifically to providers, is a way that I think you could salvage a bad private practice situation. If you're in private practice, and this is my specific question, is as a kind of running these locums company, I get calls. I feel like I certainly have a skew to you because everybody who calls me up and talks to me is in a pretty bad situation with their contract or a non-compete, or they've had some degree of trauma from whether it was hospital employed or even private practice with a single specialty group. And do you think that those situations are salvageable? And if someone was in a bad situation, maybe it's kind of at that point where they're thinking about leaving, there's drama at the workplace, et cetera. How do you know when it's salvageable? How do you salvage that? And then how do you know when to cut ties?
Yeah, so Let's talk about it in the context of just relationships, right? So any human-to-human relationship is salvageable regardless of the status of the relationship if both people are interested in salvaging the relationship. If only one person is interested, ugh, probably not. But if you can come to a place where there's at least an acknowledgement of, I want to try to rebuild what we have, then it can be salvaged through a bunch of different specific work. Now, professional relationships, I think that there's a lot more objectivity when it comes to those relationships. If there's some kind of a contract or some kind of an actual legal agreement that inhibits me from salvaging something, then there's not a lot of opportunity okay. in that moment. But I'm a firm proponent, especially like we, you know, Aaron and I do a lot of work in the marriage space. And so if there's a couple that is in a really bad space, but both are interested in salvaging that relationship, it's definitely possible. Same couple where they're in a bad place, but one is interested and the other one has contempt. Gosh, nothing's going to come out of this. So the same thing is true with a professional relationship. If I'm a physician and the practice manager or the staff or the CEO is clearly wanting to salvage the relationship, but there's contempt to the organization, it's going to be tough to salvage that.
Yeah. Excellent points.
At my kids' birthdays, I typically go all out. This year, we went to Universal and had a guide take us around the park so we could have backstage access to roller coasters and also jump the line so we could ride it as many times as we wanted. You know what? I can't do that as well as I used to be able to. In my 40s now, and so after one or two times through those intense roller coasters, the guide can take him as many times as his teenage body can allow him to do it. I still stick it out as much as I can so we can spend time together and really enjoy our time. I will say, my approach to birthdays is really unique. I own a couple different private medical practices in a couple different states. I don't have a ton of time to go on trips, but when I do, I really want to make sure I make the most of it. So
this one always makes me a little emotional. Yeah, hashtag plug for VIP experiences at theme parks. So anybody that runs a practice or is a physician, like your time to take off is obviously limited. So I highly recommend if you go to any of these major theme parks, they always have a VIP experience. And you can definitely make the most of your time there, riding roller coasters, watching shows. But, you know, my primary objective when it comes to fatherhood is getting back to relationships. I want my child to understand that, like, I'm their biggest fan and that no matter what life happens, like, one of our family core values is staying connected. So regardless of how busy we are, regardless how much time on call, regardless of how much stress there is to the practice, we prioritize connection. So if that's, like, touching base for 5 minutes at the end of the day to talk about how school was. I'm going to talk about like where your grades are and what your discipline actions are and all that stuff secondary to connection. And so that's what this trip's all about. It's really just making sure I always maintain connection very intentionally with every child that I have, which there's so many of them now.
You have four, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So that video, when I saw that, we're taking that trip next week.
Oh, man.
So we're going to Epic Universe.
You're
gonna
have such a good time.
Now, we don't... I clarified with Allie, and she said we're not doing the private guy, but apparently there's like different tiers.
There is.
So like there's like a 10-person one.
Yes, that's
we'll have five
too.
Of them, so 100%. Five of the spots. So hopefully we'll still be able to skip some
you
lines.
You will absolutely be able to. Yeah. And the parks, honestly, Epic specifically, I know this is beyond the scope of this podcast, but is a really, really cool small park. So you'll be able to do a ton in a short amount of time.
Well, great. Well, no, I'm very much looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
And you make a point in that clip that you work a lot. You're busy, and so waiting in when you do travel, you want to make the most of it.
Absolutely.
And I think that is a really good point because if you look at the price of those experiences, sometimes you're like, oh, geez, like that. How
expensive.
Do I? You know, I don't make that much an hour, but it's kind of beyond that, right? I mean, it's making you don't have that much time off.
Correct.
So how do you maximize that to make great memories with your kids? So
yeah,
I love that you do that. You touched on this a little bit, but how do you balance your professional work, all of your endeavors? With family time, four kids, a wife who, it sounds like you guys, do you work together? I know she came up with a coffee bar, I just found out.
Yeah. So. We used to. She used to be my controller.
Okay.
Aaron, standing off to the right now, she's probably the most talented person that I know. I mean, this woman taught herself how to flip a home alone. So I'm talking about building subfloor, redoing plumbing, redoing electrical, redoing roofing. The number one thing in our marriage to make sure that we do is to like support each other in each other's endeavors. So Aaron is 100% supportive of what I'm trying to do, you know, experientially, entrepreneurially, fatherhood perspective. And then, you know, I'm 100% supportive of what she's trying to do. We weren't able to make working together work best for our family. We wanted our family space, our family time to be totally devoid of like professional conversations. So when we're at the dinner table, I don't want to be talking about a balance sheet. I don't want to be talking about a P&L. I want to be talking about like, how was your day? Mm-hmm. And I want the kids to be involved in those dialogues. So I would say number one for us is intentionality. Because it can be so busy. Erin's got two or three home projects she's working on. I have the practice. And the kids have a ton of sports stuff. But when we're at home, you know, we have really intentional time. You know, we're going to eat together as a family for dinner, and then we're going to go upstairs and have a discussion about our day. This is going to maybe sound a little too intentional for some, but buckle up.
we're ready.
Every day at 8 o'clock, we sit down as a family and we go through a specific like conversation about goals the kids have set. We talk about like wins for the day. We talk about like a little lesson on like some type of American history or general global history. And then we do a Bible lesson. And we take turns as a family talking about that. Like one person will take a lesson if it's the 4-year-old taking like a prayer or whatever. Everyone's engaged in the dialogue just to make sure that we're being intentional. Now, I'm not going to say we have like a Little House on the Prairie style family. There's some nights when like, you know, some kid's like punching me in the face and I'm like, sit down in that chair. We're going to do this tonight, right? But it's always like, I want my kids to leave and I want my, you know, their childhood with mom and dad had a ton going on, but they always had time for us.
Jeez, man. Well, talk about making me feel like go from feeling like a mediocre parent to a crap parent.
Whatever, man.
That's impressive. That is really great.
Yeah.
So trips like this, how often are you able to get away and do that?
So I have four children. That's older. So their ages are 14, 11, 9, and 4. Once they turn 5, I let them choose. We can go on a weekend trip with dad, or we can have a traditional birthday party. Okay. So this year, my oldest 14-year-old chose the trip. My 9-year-old chose, you know, the Sky Zone trampoline park birthday party.
So our kids are hot into that right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's up to each kid. Their personalities are different. My oldest, he's much more, I would say, interested in thrills, experiences, sports, not as much social interaction, but then my 9-year-old's very social. Hmm. And so it just depends on the kid.
Let me know the either best or worst life advice you've ever received.
Oh, gosh. Worst would probably be never let them see you sweat. Hmm. I believe what's trying to be communicated in that statement is don't be vulnerable. And I think vulnerability is the key to courage. Especially in human relationships. If you're willing to be vulnerable, and I'm not talking about crying on somebody's shoulder, but being willing to stand up in front of your wife and say, man, I muffed it at work today, and I don't know how I'm going to make it. I don't know if this patient's going to make it. Mm-hmm. Or you're talking to your staff, man, I really made a poor business choice, and it's going to cost us, and I really appreciate you guys being involved. Mm-hmm. Being vulnerable with patients, you know, being honest about diagnostic processes. I think all of that engenders, always that requires courage, but also builds trust in every relationship.
It's so true. I found that personally be the case. Sometimes selling a patient, I don't know what the hell's going on right here. We've tried this. We've ruled out some bad stuff, but like, you know, I don't know. And sometimes that does, I think, frequently build trust to show that you're willing to know and say when you have reached kind of your limit of whatever's going on with them and done all you can do, and then we'll work with them to figure out a path forward. So
I totally agree. Yeah.
Awesome. So we do what's called Fast Five on various topics, kind of unrelated to locums or practice. All right, Fast Five Coffee Edition.
Okay.
Right. And if your wife would like to join us, that's totally that would be totally awesome.
Do you want to be part of the Fast Five?
We have a Fast Five Coffee Edition. I'd love to hear from you if you don't mind hopping in. Yeah.
I'm not as good a speaker as you.
So. You just answer quickly.
So very fast.
Well, you know, I'm really not at it.
All right. So Erin and Caleb Masterson, Fast Five Coffee Edition. Coffee lovers, coffee connoisseurs. So here we go. Iced or hot?
Hot.
Depends on the day. In the morning, hot for sure. And then I love a good shake and espresso in the afternoon.
Excellent. Dark or light roast?
Dark.
Dark.
Starbucks or Dunkin'?
Starbucks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Erin, I should tell this story. So when we were starting the coffee shop in the clinic, we were looking at different roasters, and I'm much more of an art. Like, I worked at a coffee shop in college.
Oh,
I'm much
more
like an artsy roaster kind of guy. Okay. I want like that, those like floral notes, blah, blah, blah. Erin would come sip the coffee and be like, it doesn't taste like Starbucks. I'm like, I know. That's the point.
That's the point.
She's like, okay, I'm going to go to Starbucks. Okay, cool.
So Starbucks. I love it. Well, this will probably answer this question, at least for you, Caleb. Folgers or single origin Guatemalan toasted to perfection in a diamond encrusted roaster?
Yeah. Probably somewhere in between. I don't want to spend the time in the diamond encrusted roaster, but anytime you have fresh ground coffee. Yeah. I mean, like if there's a bag of beans that you can grind and do like a French press versus, you know, like putting some scoops in a machine, the fresh ground, coffee can be not that good. Not single origin. It can be a blend. As long as it's fresh ground, it's pretty excellent.
You know, I just reconnected with one of my old junior residents, and he just bought a Honduran coffee farm.
Oh, cool.
So I feel like owning a coffee farm will be in the Masterson's future at some point. I feel like next year at this time, and maybe that'll be what we
talk
about.
I wish I had his name on the tip of my tongue, but there's an ophthalmologist that owns a roastery who just shipped us. I haven't tried the coffee yet, but the name of their coffees are unique in the sense of like medicine, but they just shipped us a bag of beans, so I'm excited to try that.
Cool. Excellent. And then final one, drive through or sit and chill with your laptop for morning?
Drive through.
Yeah, we don't have a drive through intentionally. And Aaron says most weeks, hey, you got to get that drive through.
If you get a drive through, I'll come here. So.
That's how I think that I opened and shut down coffee shops in medical school studying. So like it would open at 5 a.m. I would be in the, I'd be there with my laptop going through lectures, and they would close it at 10. They'd be like, all right, Masterson, you got to go.
I'd kick him out.
Awesome. Well, Aaron and Caleb Masterson, thank you so much for joining us and for taking time on this meeting. I hope you're having a good time at the meeting. Last night we got to go in the Lucas Oil Field.
We did.
And that was a lot of fun. Did you? I know you threw. You got a hell of an arm. Yeah. Did you guys kick at all?
I didn't wait in the line.
No. He said the line was too long.
Yeah. All right. Well, great. Well, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks, Mark.
You have been listening to Let's Locums, a podcast brought to you by SpecialtyLocums.com and hosted by Drs. Mark and Allison Royer. SpecialtyLocums.com is a physician-run locum tenens company. We're dedicated to providing the best locum tenens opportunities for our amazing healthcare providers. Join us every week as we dive deep into the world of locum tenens.